Someone may say, we want to hold yoga performances, training yoga, in the temple because it's a sacred place. It says in Bhagavad Gita, one should practice yoga in a sacred place and sit down. Okay, so we have the sitting place and we want to keep the back, head and neck straight and concentrate the eyes on the tip of the nose. Right? Everything sounds good so far. But there's one condition mentioned in this verse that we propose should be incorporated in that. That everyone who participates in this training of yoga, yoga classes, has to follow brahmacharya. That's what it says right here. Completely free from sex life. So, everyone who wants to sign up for the class, you also have to practice complete brahmacharya. Then you can take your yoga class. How do you think that would be popular? Yeah. Hmm? Okay. Go ahead, read. Going back to number three.
Translation. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization in pure spiritual life. According to various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known by different names. But all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga and may be divided into three parts, namely jnana yoga, jhana yoga, and bhakti yoga. The beginning of the ladder is called the Yoga Ruruksha stage, and the highest rung is called Yoga Rudha. Concerning the Eightfold Yoga system, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulative principles of life and practice of different sitting postures, which are more or less bodily exercises, are considered fruitive material activities.
Now, that's an interesting point. It's not even considered spiritual. This is the beginning. It's still in the fruitive category. It's because what is there? The idea is they haven't even come to the point of moral. The idea of the beginning stage is yam and niyam. This is moral principles. Trying to get to the point of getting free from sex life. That's brahmacharya. That's not spiritual. That's material. Of course, it leads one to goodness, so it's favorable. We accept it as favorable. But in and of itself, brahmacharya is not spiritual. Someone may be put in a situation, put in prison or something, where they may also be practicing brahmacharya, but that doesn't mean they're on the spiritual platform. It's because they got put in prison. Question here? There.
Because all of us, we come in Krishna consciousness, new fight.
What?
We come, we join in Krishna consciousness movement, new fights. This means, this verse means also for us.
This verse?
Yeah.
The one who is a neophyte.
Yeah.
Well, we're not in the Eightfold Mystic Yoga system. Krishna is explaining that system so that it will be understood. In other words, Arjuna, as the perfect student, and Krishna as the perfect teacher, they're asking the correct questions and Krishna is giving the correct answers. If Krishna didn't explain what the Eightfold Mystic Yoga path entailed, how would anyone know? So he's explaining everything, but very succinctly, very briefly, because it's not really the important. This chapter is dedicated to it, but the conclusion will be that Arjuna says, I can't do it, and Krishna says, don't worry, there's no need to do it. It's not practical in this age. That's the conclusion. So he's taking the time and going through the procedures to make sure that Arjuna and everyone else understands what's involved. But we're not practicing that. We're practicing bhakti yoga. Ninefold. That's the eightfold. We practice the ninefold yoga system.
Often we said we practice brahmacharya, but why we practice brahmacharya? The brahmacharya is material.
Tapasa brahmacharyena samena dhanena cha saucabhyam yamena niyamena va. Because these things, tapasa brahmacharya, these things are favorable for devotional service. Now, if brahmacharya is performed with the mood of offering this sacrifice to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it becomes transcendental. Just like an automobile, when it's used for Krishna, it becomes spiritual. A body, when used for Krishna, becomes spiritual. Similarly, a practice, a sacrifice like brahmacharya. For example, fasting. We fast on Ekadashi. When's Ekadashi? Right. So Ekadashi is Friday. So we fast on Ekadashi. Now that fasting, there's nothing spiritual about fasting, but if it's done as an offering to Krishna, whatever you do, yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat yahosi, dadasiya, yat tapasyasi konteya, tatkarushpa madarpana. So tapasi. Whatever austerities you perform should be done as an offering to me. So this brahmachari vrate, as described in the verse tonight, this austerity, that should be offered to Krishna, then it becomes spiritual.
This is a question from Australia. So, by serving Guru, one can overcome the senses, and it's not a separate endeavor?
Right, because the senses, serving the Guru means serving Krishna also. Serving both simultaneously. Guru Krishna. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatagaro tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatma. One has to have implicit faith in both Guru and Krishna. So, by serving Guru means serving Krishna. Serving Krishna, he is Rishikesh. He is the master of the senses. If we please Rishikesh, then automatically he controls our senses because he is the master of the senses. We cannot control our senses by our own endeavor. That we've seen that. Vishwamitra Muni tried so hard to control his senses, and then Indra sent Menaka, and his senses were not controlled anymore. Because he wasn't taking shelter directly of Krishna. But on the other hand, Haridas Thakur, Maya herself came. Isn't it, Vibhishan? Maya, she came herself, well dressed in the middle of night. And Haridas had no difficulty at all. He had no difficulty controlling his senses. Why? Because he was completely surrendered to Rishikesh. Well, here first.
Well, last Sunday, Deepak is getting a master's over at UMKC, and
he should be getting servants over at Arby's.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We'll see. Time will tell. So, he told me he was, as a young man, a child, his mother, his parents had him, a lady come and explain different verses of the Gita. And now he's doing some what he calls Lana Yoga. And he seems pretty satisfied.
Money yoga. Yeah, many people come from India to do money yoga here in America.
Yeah, well, he's doing both. He's doing the money yoga, and for just some peace, he says, and I'm trying to encourage him, because he took a Gita once, and he took the Krishna books there. But he's not opening them. And I'm just encouraging him to become like Arjuna, and to follow the footsteps of Arjuna, not just pick out a little page here and there once in a while, but to really become serious in his study like he does with his masters.
So what was the question?
He told me that if you did this process, you have to experience, I'm experiencing something, you know, from what I'm doing. And so maybe he's satisfied that he can do his material thing, and like we have our householders, they have their job, and he's doing mani yoga. But he's feeling satisfied with what he's doing. So it's hard to get him to be motivated to come to a higher platform.
Uh-huh.
He's pious, he likes to come to the temple.
So
how to get him to come to a higher platform?
How to get him? Yeah.
It's not yoga,
first of all. Of course, we may flatter someone to get them to buy a Bhagavad Gita, and that's okay. But if we're, as teachers, teacher can't flatter the students. Teacher has to give the direct instruction. And so, as teachers, we have to tell them that you're not practicing any yoga. If you want to practice yoga, read Bhagavad Gita, and then make some progress. Otherwise, you're just fooling yourself. Tell them, if you want to feel your friends, go ahead, but don't try to fool us. We know what yoga is, and we know what the absence of yoga is, because we're studying Bhagavad Gita. Don't play tricks with us. Let him play tricks with his friends. But we're teachers. If he wants to come and hear from us, he should try to understand. We're in the position of teachers, not proud. We shouldn't be arrogant and proud. But the fact is, we do have knowledge that others don't have. This is a good point. It's not that we are ecumenical and we have democratic, everybody has the truth. Anyone on the street, anyone comes up with some theory, and it's as good as anyone else's. We're not democratic like that. We say Krishna knows what's true. Krishna says what is yoga. Yogi nam api sarvesham. What does he say about that verse? Ask him what he thinks about that verse. Yogi nam sarvesham. The highest yogi is one who's always engaged in my devotional service. What about that?
Well, his pleasant platform seems.
What about Krishna says, Bhaktya mam abhijanati, yavan yascha smitattata. He says, bhakti is the only way I can be understood. Let's speak about Bhagavad Gita, not his concoction of some idea.
But he's just satisfied with what he's on an impersonal.
The pig is also satisfied with what he's doing, but that doesn't mean he's making advancement.
So I told him, just try to open up the Gita a few pages a day as a regular and try to channel something every day. Something's better than nothing.
You're very kind as a Vaishnava. You're trying to engage him, and that's good. Well, hopefully he'll listen and take your good advice. Time is running out. Everybody's life is ticking, ticking, ticking away. The grains are going through the hourglass. And, you know, a devotee is not supposed to just flatter them and then they waste their life and they're dead. We're supposed to try to wake them up. Utishtita, jagrita, prapya, virona, bodhita.
I have two questions. The first question is, somebody said, you are brahmachari. If brahmachari is something material, this means I am not brahmachari. And in the spiritual world, they followed such brahmachari or no?
In the spiritual world, what was the first question? That was just one question.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand what you said. Somebody said you're brahmachari
and
it's material?
It means that I'm not brahmachari because brahmachari is something material.
Does anyone understand the question?
You said the brahmachari is material.
Right.
And if somebody said me...
Said to you?
Yeah. You are brahmachari.
If someone said to you that you are brahmachari.
Yeah, this means it's something material.
I answered that question, that if it's offered to Krishna, if he's using his brahmacharya and engaging in devotional service, then it's spiritual. And yes, there are brahmacharis in the spiritual world. Why not? Everything's there in the spiritual world. There's brahmacharis and householders and there's animals and plants. If there's animals and plants and trees, then why shouldn't there be brahmacharis in the spiritual world? Second question.
Sometimes we see some ISKCON devotee and he tried to follow some yoga book. And he wastes so much time with this yoga book. And he thinks, oh, this will help me so much.
You see what?
This exercise there will help me so much. And how to preach of such?
Preach? I wouldn't worry about preaching to them. There's so many other people to preach to. Let's preach to those who want to hear. If someone is not interested in hearing, then what is the use? Preach Bhagavad Gita. Like that. Better. If they come to Bhagavad Gita class every night, they'll hear, right? They'll hear what Arjuna says about this. They'll hear what Krishna says about it. The problem is, they're not coming to Bhagavad Gita class, but they're going to, you know, Shivananda or someone else's yoga class. So that's the problem. So we have to ask what Srila Prabhupada thinks about that.
To ask you, as a representative of Prabhupada and Krishna, what are your thoughts on collecting? Sometimes maybe authorities require or ask for certain funds or invite on a collecting excursion. And personally, I prefer doing just straight books, and I really appreciate this program here. Could you tell me your thoughts on this collecting thing that many devotees do?
Of course. Collecting funds is also transcendental when it's done for Krishna. So everything can be used in Krishna's service, according to time and circumstances. Srila Prabhupada also approved of the Spiritual Sky Incense Company, made millions of dollars, and it was all used for Krishna. So Prabhupada said, "This is, how could it be Maya if Krishna is giving us so much money?" But one has to carefully consider all the factors involved in every activity. The guiding principle is whatever is favorable for the discharge of devotional service. And an expert devotee can determine that. Those who are not so expert, they sometimes err on one side or the other. For example, there's prayasaha, and there's atyahara, over-collecting or over-endeavor for material things that are difficult to achieve. Therefore, those are causes of fall down. So one has to be very careful about those. And Also, there are different orders of life. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Generally, the Brahmacharis, their life is dedicated to study, but they also go out and beg alms for the spiritual master. In our temples, we can consider this is our spiritual master's mission. So we're begging alms. Of course, the best business is distributing books, and Srila Prabhupada has clearly stated that. So, as far as possible, that should be our mood of business. But there may be some other circumstances which require, and there's nothing, provided it's legal, provided it's conducive for spiritual advancement, provided that we're keeping our Krishna consciousness while doing it. I remember one time I was distributing books. We were going to the, I think this was the first night we decided, we got this great idea to go to the drive-ins to distribute books at night. Has anyone ever distributed books at a drive-in? Well, so we tried it, and I found it very difficult. I found it a very difficult way to keep my mind fixed on Krishna. It was nighttime. The movie was already somewhat, you know, quite a lusty movie. And then the people inside the cars were really lusty. And I was trying to, you know, disturb them and try to sell them a book. It was very difficult for me to keep my mind on the highest level of, you know, Krishna consciousness. So I just decided that this was not favorable for my devotional service, even though I probably could have distributed a few books there every night, but I figured that this was not favorable for my spiritual advancement, so I decided to do some other service.
Sometimes there were different movies, different ones that you could choose.
And yeah, I wasn't so discriminating. We just went to the first movie we saw. That's what we ended up with.
You know, but I had another point, but I can't remember now.
Okay, we'll come back to it. You have another question? Go ahead. He has another. He doesn't come often.
Generally, the standard is twice printing with book distribution.
Twice what?
Printing costs. Asking a donation for twice printing end up at the end of the day with twice the printing cost of the books. That's the standard. Curious as to what, if this is better going out and doing $100 worth of printing and bringing in $160 worth of donations, or going out and doing, so the profit is $60. Then doing $100, $50 worth of printing and getting $100 worth of cost. I'm just curious, just because it's.
Well, that may be be according to the particular time and circumstances, Desha Kala Patra, different devotees may have different views on that. What you stated is kind of like the standard, and it seems to work well. At least that's what I've always done in all the years that I've been involved with Sankirtan, coordinating Sankirtan. It works nicely, it's easy, and it provides enough funds for meeting the expenses. And at the same time, it's not unnecessarily putting a burden on the book distributor or on the person who's buying the book. It's quite a reasonable, because our books, we print them in large quantities. For example, our Bhagavad Gita hardback, we sell it for how much? What's our usual double BBT? 10, 8, something like that. So that's quite a... How many pages in that book? 1,000-page book. close to 950 pages with color plate, hardback book, stitch bound. I don't think it's so easy to find a book like this in Barnes & Noble's for $8. Is it? What do you think? More like double that.
15,
at least double. Yeah. So we're giving them, they're getting a good deal. The book distributors have a nice, they're giving a wonderful product at a quite a reasonable price. And BBT is able to go on printing, and the temples are able to maintain themselves. So everything, it works out quite well all over the world. This has been a good formula. Another question? Okay, let's continue in the reading. After.
All such activities lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, he ceases all disturbing mental activities. A Krishna-conscious person, however, is situated from the beginning on the platform of meditation because he always thinks of Krishna. And being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna, he is considered to have ceased all material activities.
What is that perfect mental equilibrium? That's a wonderful thing to meditate on. Perfect mental equilibrium. In other words, no depressions, he doesn't become depressed. Nothing depresses him. And nothing makes him too elated that he forgets his position. Nothing is too exciting for him that he leaves the protection of his Krishna consciousness. See the point? Can't become too excited about something. He can't become too excited, and he can't become depressed, and he can't become bewildered. Nothing bewilders him. He's not bewildered by anything. Imagine. Or, as Krishna puts it very nicely, in that state, in this stage, one will not be disturbed even at the hour of death. Even in the greatest difficulty, the greatest dangers, he will not be disturbed. Is there a question back there?
Not yet.
So that's perfect mental equilibrium. He doesn't get lusty, because lusty immediately throws the equilibrium off. The libido. Libido is... throws everything off. Because when he becomes lusty, how can you remember Krishna when you're lusty? You're thinking of sex. So how's that thinking of Krishna? No. It's not that my sex is as good as Krishna's dancing with the gopis. No, then as soon as I'm thinking I'm lusty, I'm thinking I'm the enjoyer now. Now that Krishna had his enjoyment, now it's my turn. No, but that's not the way it works. Krishna's turn is always, it's always his turn, it's never our turn. We're never meant to try to enjoy our senses apart from Krishna's desire.
This mental equilibrium, it is our original position.
What's our original position?
This mental
equilibrium?
Yes.
It's our original position?
If it is our original position.
Yes, that's a pure devotee. Pure devotee, his mind is completely controlled, completely absorbed in Krishna.
Does it mean that a devotee's mind is completely controlled on the material platform, but it is not controlled on the spiritual platform in the sense that he is very emotional on the spiritual platform? Or does the devotee try to be also...
Spiritual platform, that's another thing. Yes, that's another thing. He may have tears flowing from his eyes like torrents of rain. His hairs may be standing on end. He may be shivering. These are spiritual emotions. But still, yes, his mind is completely in mental equilibrium. That's mental equilibrium. His mind is fully absorbed in Krishna.
If someone's on the platform of equilibrium with the mind, then will they still feel the difficulty, or will they have to analyze the difficulty, or will it just gloss right over them?
Well, it's just like for example, let's say there's some difficulty with electrical wiring. So one who's not very experienced, what will he have to do? He has to come, look at the wires, check the book, check the diagram, look it up again, call up an expert. It's a big thing for him to figure it out, isn't it? He has to trace the wires. But an expert comes, immediately takes one look, knows exactly what the problem is and how to solve it. Okay? So in other words, if one's expert, if one's advanced, the difficulties, no matter how difficult they are, for him, it just becomes a nice little challenge, not difficult at all. A nice service to do for Krishna.
For example, let's say I am a temple present, I have temple. I have a question about the his question, similar, is something not clear for me. And I have a few book distributors, and there is one from them is very good book distributor. And I think, actually, this is book distributor. He distributes so much book, but from these books, I have not so much profit for the temple. Maybe if he distributes something else that is with more profit, I can ask him for like tickets or hats or t-shirts, something like that. And maybe he can make more money for the temple.
Maybe. And but maybe not also. Maybe he won't last. Maybe he won't. Maybe that, he may be short-lived, whereas if he distributes books, maybe he'll be able to go on longer. And besides, we're not just thinking money. Money is not only our only consideration. Our consideration is to please the spiritual master. And we know that there's nothing that pleases the spiritual master more than distributing books. So, there's different ways of looking at it. But generally speaking, yes, I would advise, my personal advice is, anyone who likes to distribute books, especially brahmachari, who doesn't need any money, he doesn't need to be motivated by giving him some opportunity to make some money for himself or something else. And, of course, grihasthas, you know, they have to maintain their families. They have to work for that. But a brahmachari, he doesn't have to do that. So as far as possible, we try to engage brahmacharis in book distribution. And if they like to do that, and if they're doing well at it, then why not encourage them as far as possible? And I think that's the standard throughout our movement. I think that all the leaders would agree with me on, would be in agreement on that point. So I don't think that's not a controversial opinion.
Let's say if some president makes some mistake and he engaged this some book distributor, brahmachari, in making the money and stop him from book distribution. This is, this is a mistake or not a mistake?
Well, I don't know if you need to, you're not a temple, I don't know if you need to try to.
Yeah, but in the future, maybe somebody can ask me and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that, and so therefore I'll give you an answer that you can also give them. That maybe they should mind their own business. In other words, better we do our own service, try to do our service well, than to try to figure out how to do someone else's service. There may be other factors that one has not considered. There may be factors that sometimes it happens that there's some funds collected, some fundraising, and they build a temple or they do some project, and then they also distribute many books that way too. So I don't think it's such a thing that we can make a blanket statement that this is a mistake. This is not the proper way to approach it anyway. It's not you, a junior devotee, trying to ascertain whether someone's making a mistake or not without knowing all the details. You'd have to spend quite a bit of time to investigate, to find out all the different aspects before you'd be able to make such a judgment. And even then, your judgment may not be valid.
I just asked general.
We'd like to thank everyone around the world for attending.